Does Australia hold a key to relieving at least some of the pain of Europe's energy crisis? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. There is a lot of attention on the Isle of Grain here in the UK. It's a peninsula on England's southwestern coast that's expected to receive a shipment of much-needed liquefied natural gas later today. The delivery comes as Europe continues to struggle to find a solution to an energy crisis after Russia cut flows through the main Nord Stream 1 pipeline to just 20%. That is threatening to make for a very long, very cold winter for people across the continent. Nathan Piper, head of oil and gas research at Investec, explains then how this rare delivery of LNG from Australia could help.
The global LNG market is tight already. 70% of LNG is already under long-term contract. So really, it's the final 30% that people are playing for. And following the invasion of Russia into Ukraine and the restriction of gas supplies to Europe, gas prices in the UK and Europe have spiked. And it's those high gas prices that are attracting volumes of LNG from different parts of the world, including Australia.
And where would this LNG usually be bound for, if not the UK?
Typically, Australia supplies LNG into Asia, its closest market, to Korea, Japan, and China. If some of those Asian buyers don't need that gas urgently, they might even be able to make a little bit of money on moving that gas to the UK, so reselling it almost.
Now, the UK has three of the biggest LNG terminals in Europe. Does it have the capacity at the moment to store everything that's coming in, or will it immediately be sort of shipped through pipeline to continental Europe?
Well, that's a challenge for the UK specifically. So the UK has only a few days storage available relative to Europe, where the average is 25 to 30 days of storage capacity. So what's happening is the UK is acting as a bridge, attracting all this LNG and importing it through the LNG terminals in the UK. There's a pipeline network in the UK which connects it to two major pipelines called interconnectors. You know, effectively, we're acting as a location for LNG to be imported into Europe, and then we transport it to the continental Europe through these interconnected pipelines, which in recent years have barely been used since the Russian invasion, have been running at maximum capacity, sending gas into Europe.
Is the amount of LNG that's coming today enough to offset this energy dependency on Russia, or are we still sort of in the same boat that we've been in, and we don't have enough storage capacity, we don't have the ability to make up for the lack of what we're going to see coming from Russia in the winter?
We can't really split the UK and Europe up. I mean, the UK and Europe are part of one regional gas market, which is short of gas. So we need to import it from somewhere. Europe got 40% from Russia. Russia has cut its gas supply by 75% year on year following the invasion of Ukraine and various other things. So we are short a lot of gas, and there is not the LNG capacity globally to replace that. Neither are there other options from North Africa or Norway, where a lot of them are producing at maximum capacity anyway, to replace that gas volume from Russia. And that's why the gas price is so high. Gas prices are normally low in the summer and then high in the winter. I think the worrying thing at the moment is gas prices are at record highs now. That's why we're attracting LNG volumes from Australia. And then it really highlights an ongoing crisis that will go through into the winter of this year. And indeed, looking at the forward curve for gas, well, the gas price remains elevated for at least the next 3 years. I mean, all the way out to 2025, the forward curve is indicating gas prices that are triple the 10-year average still. So this is a prolonged gas crisis, and the shipment of LNG cargoes from Australia just underlines how extreme it is.
Nathan Piper, head of oil and gas research at Investec. Thank you so much for breaking this down.
My pleasure.
Checking the numbers now, the main European natural gas benchmark soared as much as 17% this morning on ongoing worries about gas shortages this winter. Making matters worse is Russia's Gazprom said deliveries through the Nord Stream pipeline will stop for 3 days at the end of this month for maintenance. That is putting pressure on the euro currency, which fell below parity to the U.S. dollar. That's 1-to-1. Regional stock benchmarks, meanwhile, are down about 0.5% to 1.5% at this hour. In Japan, 10,000 employers have been found forcing staff to work illegally long hours. That is the result of an investigation by the country's labor ministry, as the BBC's Will Leonardo reports.
Japan has long struggled with how to tackle extreme working hours. New legislation introduced in 2019 attempted to clamp down on the practice. Now the Labour Ministry says it's inspected more than 30,000 workplaces where employees had flagged up problems. Of those, a third were found to be in breach of the rules. More than 2,000 were making their employees work over 100 hours overtime a month. While coronavirus has led to more flexible working in many traditionally rigid Japanese workplaces, the ministry said the pandemic had also led to staff shortages, putting pressure on existing employees.
That's the BBC's Will Leonardo there. Last spring, Western nations were accused of hoarding COVID-19 vaccines as countries raced to procure doses. Now, though, demand for those vaccines is so low on the African continent, Aspen Pharmacare is on the verge of shutting down its production line. From Cape Town, South Africa, the BBC's Vumani Mkhazi explores whether calls for more localized manufacturing capability are still relevant.
The provision of vaccines in Africa has always been lagging compared to the rest of the world. For 43-year-old Cape Town resident Noluvuyo Mandlana, the consequences of this have been fatal. She lost her husband last year to COVID-19, just a month before vaccines were rolled out.
I lost my husband, I lost my mother-in-law, my brother-in-law at the same time. If the vaccine was available on that time, it could save lots of people. It could save lots of people.
But now that vaccines are widely available, only a fifth of Africans have received the jab. People on the continent aren't as concerned about vaccinating anymore, and it seems African vaccine manufacturers are behind the curve. For Afrigen's Professor Petro Terblanche, creating local vaccine capacity is about more than just COVID-19.
We're already now starting to look at what are the next vaccine candidate. COVID-19, we're positioning this as a booster. We will do the clinical trials. But what is the next one? The first project now that's been activated by South Africa Medical Research Council is a TB project, a TB mRNA vaccine. And we're also now looking at vaccines which are relevant for the burden of disease in low and middle income countries.
Have vaccine manufacturers in Africa missed the boat in terms of providing vaccines quickly for Africans here on the continent?
So the African manufacturers at the time when vaccines were in such dire need on this continent were not equipped to produce the vaccines or even to full finish the vaccines. That happened at a later stage. If we had capacity at that time on this continent to produce an mRNA vaccine, we would have increased the vaccination rates of this continent. And therefore, this program, although it was created as a response to the pandemic, it is actually now being driven as pandemic preparedness. May this never ever happen on this continent, that there is an outbreak of a devastating disease and we cannot supply vaccines to our people.
We do technology development and we can...
Afrigen is part of a World Health Organization initiative to create and transfer mRNA vaccine technology across developing countries. With teams of highly skilled scientists and high-tech machinery, Afrigen is the hub of vaccine manufacturing on the continent.
Afrigen is the first pharmaceutical company in Africa to develop the active ingredient of a COVID-19 vaccine from scratch. So today is actually quite a momentous occasion. The team here behind me is from Egypt, and they are part of the first skills and technology transfer on the continent. Sharing information is key to developing Africa's vaccine manufacturing capacity.
With Africa only producing 1% of its vaccines, the African Union has set an ambitious target to ramp up production to 60% by 2040. For that to happen, manufacturers on the continent need much more skills, technology, and financial assistance.
That's Vumani Mkhazi there, and a big thank you and goodbye to Studio Director Ash Taylor on his last day with us. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.